This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international programme of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Robert Picardo, the emergency medical hologram from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hi everyone at home and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host Kay Shaw, and with me as always are
Suzanne Williamson and
Zachary Frewley.
Well, we have what I hope will be a very interesting topic for you tonight. It's one we've been throwing around the idea of for a while. There was something that we noticed that a lot of our Voyager crew had in common. Any ideas what that might be, guys?
They all have
daddy issues.
They do.
You know, I never really thought about this, but this is so true. The crew of Voyager have way more daddy issues than the crew of any other Star Trek show.
Oh, yeah.
Am I right about that? Is that an unfair statement? I think it's true.
Absolutely.
Hands down.
Yeah, and I think when we first came up with, like, the vague idea for this topic, which was quite a while ago, I don't think we all realised quite how many of the crew this actually extended to, because I think at first we just thought, oh yeah, there's like four or five of them that have daddy issues, we could totally do an episode on that, and then we were like, actually, it's pretty much all of them.
With a couple of exceptions.
Yeah. With a couple of exceptions, yes.
Yes, very few exceptions.
But then we don't know. We don't really know, because I mean, we don't really hear about Neelix's family that much, so maybe he does have daddy issues, he doesn't talk about them.
And maybe that's why he left Talix in the first place. Because he had daddy
maybe
issues.
There are the great daddy issues from Star Trek shows past, like Riker and his dad. That's a serious daddy issue in Star Trek The Next Generation. Mm. But Voyager seems to take it to 11.
Yeah, I don't know whether this was like anything intentional in the writing or whether it just completely happened by accident. But it is really amusing when you start looking for it. It's just there. It really is
yeah,
there.
When even a hologram has daddy issues. Like, really? Come on.
Even the gel packs have daddy issues, right? So do you guys have a favorite character with daddy issues in Voyager? Does one particularly speak to you?
Chakotay?
I could have guessed.
But he's not my favorite, even though, you know, it's Chakotay. And mine would be the Doctor and Dr. Zimmerman. Yeah. That's my favorite daddy issue.
Yeah. How about you, Zach?
I have to answer this question now?
Yeah. Okay, it's your question. Come on.
I want to say Tom Paris, but I think he's just so whiny about it. It really just kind of bugs me at the same time. So I like Tom Paris's. I like what it's done to Tom Paris and how he gets over it, but I don't particularly like his whininess.
I can't believe he called Tom whiny.
Are you kidding me? Look, listen to him in 30 days.
Oh, please. Nobody whines as much as Harry.
That's true, but not about his dad. Harry doesn't have daddy issues.
No, he has mommy issues.
Apron strings, etc.
What about Tuvok?
I don't think Tuvok has daddy issues.
I think Tuvok is kind of like the reverse of the relationship between Sarek and Spock, right? Sarek absolutely didn't want Spock to go into Starfleet. Right? Mm-hmm. He wanted him to go to the Science Academy. And Spock, he breaks the mold and he goes to Starfleet Academy. Tuvok's father desperately wanted him to go to Starfleet because he thought he needed structure. And Tuvok was the rebellious one that didn't want to go to Starfleet, right?
Therefore, is daddy true, issues.
Daddy issues.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Tuvok does have daddy issues.
Uh-huh. Now, they don't manifest very much. Unless,
it's just Neelix and Harry then that don't.
No, but they did when he was younger. So that still qualifies in the daddy issues category.
I'm just wondering whether or not, like, in the writer's room, when they were creating these characters, this came up. Because you just imagine them sat there going, yes, strained relationship with father. Character number two, strained relationship with father. Hang on a minute, are we getting a bit derivative here?
Maybe they just, like, had a dartboard and they just kept hitting that square when they were trying to figure out what to write.
Maybe. Yeah. It is quite funny, though. But the great thing about it is I think that the nature of the daddy issues is different for everybody, which is quite nice.
It is almost like they sat around and said, okay, every character has to have daddy issues. How many varieties can we come up with?
Yeah. It's like, oh, fine. If they're all having daddy issues, we've got to at least make them all different.
Well, I want to hear what you guys... You guys both said Chakotay, and I don't naturally think of Chakotay as having that much in the way of daddy issues.
Dude, seriously?
Yeah, you see some flashbacks. Seriously, like, it doesn't seem to affect him very much, really. Like,
oh my gosh, it affected his childhood and where he went with
his
life.
And his entire life.
But he got over it.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
No.
Have I been misreading Chakotay this whole time?
Yes.
Give me the Chakotay as you see Chakotay's life unfolding.
Well, basically, he's like completely the opposite of what his father wants him to be.
But he's learned to appreciate that.
Later.
That's what I'm saying. He no longer has daddy issues.
No, he still has daddy issues.
Yeah, but he still has hang-ups about it.
He's still trying to make amends for everything he did. But with his father being gone, he can't really do
that.
That
could be. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's a complete, well, I don't know whether he's a disappointment to his father, but I think he thinks he is.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's how his dad sees it, but that's how he sees it.
I don't see Kolpak holding that kind of grudge
and seeing
Chakotay in that light.
Yeah, but that's how Chakotay sees it, because he's not wanted to carry on all of the traditions. He's been very, like, forward-facing, and he wants to leave and go and join Starfleet and see the universe and everything, which is not really the way that, like, the rest of his tribe kind of sees everything. They're much more traditional.
Maybe we have a little ambiguity here. Like, what does it mean to have daddy issues, right? Okay, so he was a rebellious teenager. He didn't want to hang out with his tribe. He wanted to go explore in outer space. I get that. Okay, but why is that a daddy issue?
Because, well, we haven't gotten to the really, like, meaty stuff yet. So he leaves and goes off to Starfleet. And in the meanwhile, obviously his home planet is in, like, the demilitarized zone, and the Cardassians start, like,
Murdering.
Sniffing around and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And then, as a result of the fact that his family are forced to defend their planet against the Cardassians, his father gets killed, and then he feels massively guilty about the fact that he wasn't there because he decided to leave.
Okay, now we're getting to that.
And he also lied.
The guilt.
Yeah.
He told Captain Sulu that he had his parents' permission to join Starfleet.
And he didn't.
And the Academy. And he didn't.
And then obviously he goes back, and that's when he gets the tattoo, which was his father's tattoo, which is him like taking this symbol on of the fact that he's going to avenge him. And that's why he joins the Marquis, because he feels like he now has to avenge his father.
Okay, when you put it in these terms, he's sounding fairly reactive.
Daddy
okay.
issues.
I think of Chakotay as kind of a cool guy. Like, he's not really overly reactive. He's kind of thoughtful about stuff. But you're describing some pretty reactive behavior from Chakotay.
I don't know. Chakotay will punch you if you're not careful.
That's
also
true.
Did you he's listen not. To the Angry Warrior speech?
Angry Warrior.
He only became like that after Janeway. That is the point. And then, of course, we also learn that I know at one point his dad shows up in a vision quest, doesn't he? But he does say at one point that he hasn't actually been able to see his father in vision quests for a really long time.
Uh-huh.
And that's all part of his whole hang-up thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's super interesting. I love Chakotay. Chakotay's so interesting. He gets so, like, hard done to as a character.
I mean, I don't want to turn the episode into a defense of Chakotay, but I think you're right. He's a deeper character than he gets credit for.
Yeah, he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe because of his daddy issues.
Yeah, absolutely. So There you go. That's Chakotay's daddy issues. Get a tattoo and go on a quest for vengeance.
Sounds about right.
So, I mean, really, that's more like him and his perception of how his dad views him rather than his dad's actual view of him. Because I think his dad's way more zen than that.
Yeah.
Like, his dad's way more kind of chilled out than to be.
I like his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His dad's great. He's a cool dad.
Well, he's just into the history of their tribe and culture. And yet he's so modern, too. He's got fairly modern clothes on when they're, you know, bebopping around the jungle.
Well, when he's not taking his clothes off, yes.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
Bebopping around the jungle, I love it. You've got to be well equipped for modern jungle life, Zach.
You have to have the right hat.
Like, jungle wear fashions.
I like his hat. I think
he does have a nice hat. I like his hat.
It is a good hat. Yeah.
If I were Chakotay, that's what I would have a hang up about. I just wish I could get one of those hats like Dad used to have.
Yeah. Maybe instead of the tattoo, he could have taken the hat and worn it.
Right.
But then he'd have to have the longer hair.
He would have needed longer hair.
Yeah. Because it wouldn't work with short hair.
It's really funny, actually, because Robert Beltran actually has grown his hair long now, hasn't he?
I've seen pictures of him like that, yeah.
It kind of makes you wonder what it would have been like if Chakotay had had long hair.
Put a hat on him, you know?
But then, you know, Photoshop with Starfleet regs, it would have had to have been pulled back.
Yeah, while he's on duty.
Unless he had the Worf bob going on.
The Worf bob.
Worf bob.
Come on, that's what it was.
The bouffant.
Worf bob, I love it. So that's Chakotay, really, you know.
Okay, you've convinced me. I didn't really think of him as having daddy issues. I mean, I knew he was kind of rebellious, and I didn't really dwell on that when I think about Chakotay. That's interesting that it made a bigger impression on you guys than for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you read the books...
Yes, definitely.
Oh, we're going there again?
Always.
We're always going there. Some of the little seeds of this type of thing that we get on screen get fleshed out a lot more. So.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, you kind of get a bit... blurred between what actually
that's what I'm
in
saying
the show
are you guys reading
the books.
Are you guys reading too much from the books into the show?
No, that's definitely there. I mean, we okay. know about how he there. Took his tattoo yeah, after right. his father died and the fact that he joined the Marquis because of that, so we know all of that. Yes, we get more of the detail behind that, but we definitely know that from the show.
I guess my view on it was just like being able to tell a story about it doesn't mean he's got deep issues about it. Like, Tom's got actual issues, right? It bothers him.
The murder of his family bothers him. That's why he joined the Maquis.
Well,
yeah.
Okay.
It bothers him, but because he's like somebody who spends a lot of time in meditation and self-reflection and all of that type of thing, he's just better at handling it on a day-to-day basis. But he does have moments where he gets really het up about it.
Yeah, he's not all whiny about everything. Like, well, I don't agree with your assessment of Tom by saying he's whiny, but let's say Harry Kim, he's not all whiny about it.
he goes and meditates in his quarters. Akuchimoya, we are far from the headwear of our fathers.
Yes.
We have talked about Tom and his daddy issues quite a bit, actually, but in fact, we did that last week. I think we're fairly familiar with what's going on there.
Like I said, I kind of gave a caveat for this one because... it's clearly affected Tom in a deep way. It not only bothers him, but it like manifests itself in Tom's behavior. And I think that's why maybe I associate daddy issues with Tom more than with Chakotay. But it also does. I was serious about this. It seems like he's a little whiny about it. You know, don't you just want to go, Tom, kind of get over it, dude? And you don't have to set the bar so high for yourself. You don't have to beat yourself up when you make a mistake. You don't have to do all this, Tom.
He gets there, though. He does get there.
I still don't see it as whiny, though.
Yeah, I don't really see Tom as a whiny person. Like, yeah, he does talk about it, but I don't feel like he talks about it to excess. There are some episodes where it's a focus, but I don't feel like he's whinging about it every week.
No, not every week. No. But like in our last episode, we were talking about Threshold, and he's pretty whiny even Threshold about his dad, right?
Well, can you blame him? He was like, we're becoming a salamander.
That's gonna have a crimp on your day.
Yeah. That's going to bring up other issues that you weren't thinking about. Oh, I'm losing my tongue. Hey, my dad didn't really love me.
My big daddy salamander didn't love me.
Exactly. You just, you know, I hate it when that happens.
What, when you lose your tongue?
You get up in the morning, you have plans, and you're like, darn, I'm becoming a salamander. I had today all planned out, and now look, I'm puking up my tongue instead of what I had on the schedule. But I think the distinction for me, I think, between Chakotay and Tom, if we're talking about, because there's similarities there, you know, it's all about living up to dad's expectations.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. It all comes down to expectations.
But the fundamental difference for me is the fact that with Tom, I think the expectations of his father are genuinely there to that extent, whereas with Chakotay, I think they're a bit more in his head.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to, like, get real for a minute. I know we're supposed to talk about Voyager,
we're
but...
getting real.
We are. We're getting real for a minute. I want to know why people's reactions about this kind of thing are different. I have never felt, even though, you know, my dad and I might have different issues, I don't feel like I had an expectations issue with my dad. I have never felt the need to be anything other than what I was. There are other issues, but it's not an expectations issue. So when I hear things like Chakotay's dad expects him to be a certain way or Tom's dad expects him to be a certain way, I just kind of fundamentally don't relate. So I kind of go, get over it, dudes.
Yeah. But, you know, I've never had that. Like, my parents have never, ever done anything other than support me in whatever I've wanted to do.
Right, likewise. That's what I'm saying. Right.
But I can totally relate to people who have that issue, because mm-hmm. I know people whose parents, like, massively have a set of expectations for them that they think they rigidly should adhere to. And I just,
yeah.
although that's not something I've experienced, you can relate to that. And I think that would be awful, but...
Isn't that, like just massively inauthentic, though? Like... being so bound by your parents' expectations?
In some cultures, that's the standard. It's like your parents want you to go into this one profession, even though your passion is somewhere else. You do what your parents want you to do.
You must be a doctor. You must be a lawyer. You must be a politician. Mm-hmm. You must be fill in the blank. You're right. Okay.
Well, yeah. And I mean, obviously, you know, you're going to have some people whose parents have massive expectations of them that are going to feel really bound by that, as you say, and then there's some people that are going to just rebel against that, and it just depends on your personality. Like, some people are just going to be like, because their parents have massive expectations of them, are determined to do exactly the opposite thing.
Yeah.
But that's not who these people are. Yeah, I guess it's like how much you care about your parents and how much you care about their expectations for you and all the rest of it.
And how they raised you.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I think, you know, having too many expectations for your kids is really wrong, because, you know, they didn't ask to be there, and you don't really get to tell them what they can and can't do.
So I shouldn't expect Logan to be president?
Well, you know, you can encourage him, but if he's like, Mom, I don't really want to be president.
Then I'll be like, you can be an astrophysicist. Yeah.
I kind of expect him to be a philosopher, just projecting some expectations.
He does fall asleep to Metatrex already, so.
Oh, he's got that down pat. Okay.
So out of the other people that we've got, daddy issues, which, as we've said, is the majority of the crew, has anyone else got issues that we think are, like, to do with living up to dad's expectations?
The doctor?
Oh, yeah, the doctor.
Definitely the doctor.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because he's trying to prove himself to Dr. Zimmerman. Hey, I'm worthy, even though the other EMH Mark 1s are in a mining facility.
Yeah. It's not a matter of trying to meet dad's expectations in this situation, right? Because Dr. Zimmerman's expectation for the doctor is that he's essentially a talking puppet.
Yeah. So it's about trying to prove dad wrong.
Yeah.
It's proving worth. Exactly. Yeah. It's not meeting expectations.
Yeah, it's about saying, actually, no.
I've exceeded your expectations. Please acknowledge that.
Acknowledge that, yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, he thinks they're only good for the proverbial scrap heap, but, you know, the dilithium mines, etc. Because obviously, you know, that hologram for Dr. Zimmerman was a massive vanity project.
You think?
So the fact that he's seeing the doctor show up with his face and the fact that he feels like that project was a failure, I mean, that's already colouring the way that he's going to react to him straight away.
Well, this is an interesting nuance, because it's not a case of Dr. Zimmerman being kind of on a pedestal and the doctor trying to reach Dr. Zimmerman's level. It's actually kind of like a weird reversal of that, where Dr. Zimmerman has this crisis of confidence because his children, his creation, are a massive disappointment, not in their own being, but the reflection of him.
Yeah.
He's got child issues, or he's got son issues.
Yeah.
Sons, many of them.
Yeah, and then the doctor's daddy issues stem out of that.
It's very complex.
It is.
It's more complex than Chakotay.
Well, yes and no.
It's different.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And it's nice to see when he starts to actually acknowledge the Doctor has exceeded what he thought he was capable of.
I love that little family photograph that he takes too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is nice.
One for the Hollow album. Yes.
Although, going back to the Hollow image, why is the Doctor taller than Dr. Zimmerman? I never quite understood that.
Because the real people hunch, and real people have spines that get compressed, and Dr. Zimmerman has been around for a while, and he's hunched over working, and he's got a slouch, and he looks old, like people tend to do, right?
I don't know about getting old. I don't do that.
No, it's a thing, right? People get tall, and then they kind of shrink a little bit because their spine compresses. So that's why. I think Dr. Zimmerman is like a real person, is actually shrunk, and that will never happen to the Doctor.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And except in that one episode where he's real short. Right?
Yeah. Well, isn't he short in two episodes? Oh, no, that's his little figurine.
Two episodes. Yes. Yeah. He built his own holographic action figure. An opera-singing action figure.
Everybody should have one.
Nare immobile. But I think that the nicest thing I think about the Doctor and his relationship with his, in inverted commas, dad slash programmer slash creator,
oh, calm down,
is the fact that we actually get to see them interact. And I think, yes, we get to see some of them interact with their dads, maybe in slight flashbacks or, you know, memories or things like that. But it's the only time we really get to see them properly interact together.
Yeah, not younger versions of them. Yeah.
Not just work out their issues individually, but work out their issues together. And they may not reach a total understanding, but they've reached some sort of
feel like you get the impression that as and when they get back to the Alpha Quadrant, that relationship's something that's gonna continue. I certainly see that carrying on.
I wish they could have touched on that with Admiral Paris and Tom. I mean, even when there was communication, Tom's on the bridge and Admiral Paris is talking only to Captain Janeway. It's like, but dude, your son's right there.
What a missed opportunity to... I mean, they spent all this time establishing that as a character trait for Tom, and then they kind of blew it off when they had the chance to delve into it.
Well, yeah. And also, you know, once we start getting the live communications with Earth, it would have been nice to at least have seen one conversation with them where they...
Yeah, instead, I could have done without seeing Harry's parents.
Yes, they were most boring parents ever.
Yawn. Just saying.
They clearly dote on their son, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Harry's relationship with his parents is kind of like my relationship with my parents, so I don't want to comment on that too much.
No, I don't see that.
Let it be said for the record that my parents are amazing.
Mine too.
Yeah, your mom stocks you up on your favorite cider. What's wrong with that?
She does. She does. She goes to the wholesaler and she buys me my favorite cider because she's awesome.
My mom, literally, I kid you not, she sent me a text message the other day saying, do you want to come over for soup?
Aww. Soup. I love soup.
So maybe I'm a little more like Harry than I
am. I'm glad my mom doesn't send me those texts because she is an awful cook. I'm sorry. I love her to death, but oh my God. She's
is she
awful.
Like Janeway?
No, she's worse. The only seasonings she has in her house are salt and pepper, and she rarely uses either one of them. Yeah, it's just bad.
Well, according to the Restaurant Impossible guy, that's all you need.
But she doesn't really use them.
That's the key. You have to use them, right? So, and that's his main criticism of restaurant food. Like, they need to actually put some salt and pepper in
there. You gotta season things.
But getting back to the Doctor for just a minute, because I wasn't quite done talking about the Doctor. Do you think that the Doctor actually complains that his hollow dad never comes to his operatic performances?
Yeah, I don't see Dr. Zimmerman doing that.
No.
I see him like sighing and rolling his eyes. Oh, do I have to?
Well, isn't he like, why have you got all this stuff in there? You know, like, what?
Why are you fully functional?
Learn all this crap.
You've got 4 billion gigaquads about opera.
That is more information than anybody needs about opera, to be honest. But it's interesting, you know, that we got slightly onto the topic of cooking, because even though we're talking about daddy issues, I kind of wondered whether or not Janeway's cooking problems came from mummy issues, because isn't her mum supposed to be an amazing cook?
Yes, she is supposed to be an amazing cook.
So she feels inadequate that she's not as good of a cook.
She's trying to live up to her mum's expectations and failing and burning
can
pot roast.
Can barely replicate
replicator.
A cup of coffee, yeah.
Barely make a cup of coffee, yeah. But Janeway's daddy issues are in a bit of a different direction, aren't they?
Yes.
Do you think that Captain Janeway's mom made that vegetable bouillon that she was so enthusiastic about in Eye of the Needle?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
She brought that with her.
Just like mom used to make.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a bit of a special moment, wasn't it? They were obviously a few minutes short on that episode.
Not only did they play with Janeway's hairstyles, but they play with her, you know, lunch orders.
Vegetable bouillon. Marvelous.
Do you think that line was originally written for the first actress who played Captain Janeway?
Possibly, yeah. It's really early on, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It is really early on, and I'll bet you they wrote it with the other actress in mind, and it plays a lot better when a French person says it.
That is true, actually. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Oh, yeah, that would have sounded really nice with a French accent. I mean, nothing against how Kate Mulgrew said it, but yeah. But now I'm like hearing it in a Russian accent.
Hang on. This is a total tangent, but I've just had a thought. So in Next Gen, we had a French person with an English accent. And then in Voyager, if we'd have kept the original actress who was supposed to play Captain Janeway, we'd have ended up with an American...
With a French accent.
...character with a French accent.
With a French accent.
Unless she was supposed to be Canadian, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if they would have made her Canadian instead of from Indiana. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. If she had a French accent.
She didn't sound as folksy, that's true.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, her daddy issues are a different flavour entirely, aren't they?
Yes.
She has no problem living up to dad's expectations. She's always been the high flyer, but...
Oh yeah, she's always exceeding them.
Yeah. With her, it's more all about getting dad's attention.
Mm-hmm.
I think Janeway views expectations as a challenge. She's not just going to meet the expectations, she's going to go above and beyond at every turn.
Yeah, but I think more for her, it's not that she thinks her dad expects anything specific of her. It's more about her doing things in order to get his attention because she feels like she doesn't have it a lot of the time. Like, she totally idolizes him, but he's so busy with his work that she wants to get more of his attention by, like, hi, I'm here, look what I did.
And then when she fails in trying to do that, she punishes herself. Like the tennis match that she didn't win, then she walks home in the rain.
So she's like the puppy that just wants to be pat on the head.
Yeah.
Is it an Irish setter puppy?
I'm not talking about the puppy.
I'm not talking about the dog.
But I don't think of Captain Janeway as having particularly strong daddy issues in that sense.
Oh, she does.
No, dude.
She does.
Read Mosaic, please.
I think you guys read these issues as stronger than I do, and I think that's interesting. Maybe that says more about us than it does about the characters.
Maybe, but I think, you know... Janeway's always had these issues where she's always wanted to get her dad's attention. Yeah, okay, maybe some more of that comes from Mosaic than it does from the show. But we do know that, like, her dad died in this shuttle accident and she didn't. And there's a lot of hang-ups around that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Because she wasn't able to save him or her fiancé.
She has massive survivor guilt. And I think that drives a lot of why she has issues with, like, leaving anybody behind.
Mm-hmm.
Why she feels so responsible for, like, the Voyager crew because she's been there before. Because she's basically got this huge, why was I the one that survived out of the three of us, basically. And she only barely survived as well.
Yeah, and her depression stemmed from that, and then it reignites because of Voyager.
Yeah.
So, again, we're reaching here a little bit maybe, but people generally think of Captain Janeway as a very maternal captain. She tends to mother hen her crew a little bit, right?
She has her moments.
You think that's a consequence of her relationship with her parents?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know how much is from the show and how much is from the book, so I'm going to have to apologize for that. But, you know, I get the impression that her mother is a very motherly person.
Mm-hmm.
That she's very much of a bake you cookies, wrap you up warm kind of mum. So she obviously inherits some of that from there.
Definitely. I think that's more that we get from the books as opposed to the series. I mean, Gretchen isn't mentioned a lot at all in the
show.
They
don't even get names. Do they get names in the show, her mum and her sister?
I don't think so.
Just get names in the books. No,
I was trying to remember, and I couldn't remember off the top of my head. I couldn't remember.
The thing is, they're so ingrained because they're mentioned in the books, and then everybody uses the names in fan fiction. So if you read fan fiction, they're just so much in there, you forget that they don't even mention them in the show.
But they should have, because I mean, Jerry Taylor wrote Mosaic, so they should have been in the show. Yeah,
it's as close to canon as you can get when it comes to books. Yeah. They're still not strictly canon, but it's the closest you can get. But I think her relationship with her mum was pretty good. That's the impression I got anyway.
Shifting gears a little bit, what about B'Elanna? I think B'Elanna's having way stronger daddy issues than...
Yeah, she does.
Definitely. Yeah. But she has mommy issues too. She's got it all.
She has all the issues. Well, B'Elanna really is a massively interesting character anyway, because she plays this role that we kind of see throughout the history of the different iterations of Star Trek, where we get this duality where she's caught between the two worlds, and she's not entirely human, she's not entirely Klingon, she doesn't fit into either, and she's trying to figure out how on earth she can find a place for herself. Mm-hmm. And her mother wants her to be Klingon, and her dad kind of struggles with that a bit, and she just ends up getting stuck between the two.
Yeah, and it's an interesting dichotomy with, like, the Spock character in the original series. Oh, yeah. Spock is the exact opposite situation. His human side is the aggravating side, and his Vulcan side is the side that kind of pacifies him. And B'Elanna, it's the exact opposite, right? Yeah. With B'Elanna, the human side is what pacifies her, you know, Klingon intensity.
Yeah. But, I mean, like you say, you know, her daddy issues are so marked, really, because he drives the fact that she tries to reject her Klingon side, because she sees the fact that... Because he said this throwaway comment that she heard at one point about how on earth is he supposed to cope with two Klingons kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, well, he doesn't love me because of my Klingon half. And, you know, obviously, like, she blames herself for her parents separating and all the rest of it. So.
And that's so messed up, because that's totally different than, like, not living up to someone's expectations. That's, like, who you are, your biology, yeah,
fundamentally,
right? That's terrible.
Who you are as
That's so deeply ingrained in who she is, right? It's not a consequence of the choices she's made. It's just the reality of her life, yeah.
It's kind of similar to the Doctor, really. I mean, there's similarities to the Doctor. It's fundamentally who he is that is the problem.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to prove that he's better than that, and she's trying to prove that she can be more human, and trying to prove that, because I mean, really early on we see her massively rejecting her Klingon half, and I don't think we ever really within the show see her make peace with that. I think she's always more like, nope, I'm not interested in being Klingon, I don't want it, and all the rest of it, even right into the final season when we see what happens in Lineage, you know, that she's not wanting her daughter to look Klingon and all the rest of it, you know. So that's really deeply in there. And as much as that's not her dad that's generated that, by him leaving, that's the impression that she's got, and that's how she's got into that mindset. And I'm not saying that's entirely his fault, because it's partly also her assumptions. But you can see how she's got there.
Yeah, and it's part of the reason her Klingon aggravation, her Klingon intensity is so deeply buried, and it just kind of comes out in spurts sometimes because she's repressed it so much.
Well, exactly.
Until it gets to a point where she can't control it, and it's like, explosion.
Exactly. And that's exciting to see on the screen, so I think that's why B'Elanna gets a lot of screen time for that kind of thing, because it's very expressive. Mm-hmm. You know, that's her way of relieving the pressure. Whereas Tom doesn't do that. He doesn't, well, a little bit, actually. Tom acts up too, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really, in some ways it comes to me, because I really like the fact that we get the episode Faces fairly early on, and the fact that we get to see her split into these two halves, and she gets to realise that they're actually both part of her, and she's a fundamentally different person if she gets rid of either part. But I kind of wish that episode had come a bit later, because I think as early on as it is, we don't really see the development from it that I feel like we should have done. If it had come a bit more like season 4, maybe. I know they fit it in with like the Vidian plot and everything, and that's why it was where it was. But, you know, to me, it would have made more sense if that had been later and she'd have had that epiphany a bit later on, because we still see her going through that conflict even after that point. So,
you know how they have these kind of like corporate retreats where people do trust falls and stuff? Can't you picture B'Elanna doing like trust falls with herself in that episode?
You're off on trust falls.
No way.
Again.
We need each other. We're a team.
She wouldn't trust herself. No.
I don't see either half trusting the other at that point, to be honest. But again, I kind of hope that when they get back to Earth, B'Elanna's going to be looking for her dad to kind of try and
I hope so.
Resolve some of that stuff. Yeah.
Read the books.
Read the books, Zach.
Subtle, guys. Subtle. Subtle as ever. Getting back to the doctor and daddy issues, though. Remember, in blink of an eye, when the doctor is down on that planet and he ends up in a relationship and he's got a son that he talks about when he gets back to the ship, do you think the son totally resents that dad left and went back to Voyager?
How did he have a son?
Oh my god, I never thought about that. That's what I want to know. I wanted to know how he had a son.
That always bugged me. I'm like, wait a minute.
Maybe it was just an adopted son.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Maybe he was like his stepdad, I don't know.
Stepdad or something, right, exactly, yeah. Anything like that.
But yeah, that's a... I never really thought about
that.
That would
cause some serious daddy issues right
there. We need to write... Somebody needs to write that fanfic.
He just went out for a gallon of milk and never came back.
He went out to watch...
He went out for space milk?
Whatever the heck game that was. Yes, yeah, space everything. Whatever the heck that game was that he kept trying to watch in that episode, wasn't he like some sports team?
There's some sport that was like the big sport on that planet.
Yeah.
Lakeside or whatever, right?
That was it, Lakeside.
Oh, Team Lakeside.
Yeah.
He's like, Dad just wants to watch sports all the time.
Yeah, he left me to go watch sports. It's fine, though. By the time he'd beamed back up to the ship, he'd already been gone like 20 years. He was already, like, devastated and then over it. The second the doctor materialized, he was over it already. He was like, oh, Dad's not coming back. I don't need that jerk around anyway.
Well, moving down the list of characters, what about Seven of Nine and her Borg daddy issues? And by extension, maybe all of the Borg children.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got a few different things going on here, haven't you? Because with Seven, I mean, we find out it's more parent issues than anything else because, you know, her parents are just, I don't even know what the word is, but idiotic will probably do.
That is definitely, yes, the word I would use.
Yeah, they're like, oh, the Borg. Let's go poke the Borg dragon.
Yeah.
Let's take our small child.
Let's take our small child to go repeatedly poke the hornet's nest. Oh, look, we got assimilated. Whoops.
Oops, my bad.
Yeah. So, yeah, issues there. Issues there.
And we get to see Seven's father. But we don't get to see her mother, do we?
I thought we did. Isn't Owen Dark from
here? I think so, in the shuttlecraft.
No. After the assimilation.
Oh, no. I don't think
we're assimilated. Right? No, I don't think so.
I can picture Seven of Nine telling this story like a flashback. Like, one time I was little and I walked in the room and the Borg Queen was assimilating my dad.
Tumbleweed.
And the sound of crickets.
For the purposes of the fact that listeners can't see right now, Suzanne and I were both face-palming during that. We were doing a classic Jean-Luc Picard face-palm.
Yes.
dad jokes.
Well, it's a good episode for dad jokes if you're going to come out with some.
Yeah. Why didn't we see her mom after assimilation?
I don't know. That would have been quite cool.
And it was a missed opportunity. They could have made her the Borg Queen. That would have been
amazing.
That would have been even more of a pull for Seven to want to go back.
Okay, I totally never thought of that, and that is like the best idea I've heard
fanfic
in a long time for what could happen on Voyager.
Ooh, fanfic. Somebody write it up.
Who says her mum wasn't the Borg Queen? Headcanon.
Because
She does have a very unique pull on Seven, and we never really find out exactly why. Maybe it's because she escaped and people don't escape from the Borg.
That's a great idea.
But you could headcanon that, potentially.
The Borg Queen doesn't really look like Seven's mother, but...
Well, we can get around that, Zach, because the different actresses play the Borg Queen anyway, so...
Mm-hmm. That's true.
We can gloss over that part of it quite easily.
Yeah, when one is killed, another one takes over.
So do Borgs have, like, queens-in-waiting? Like, Borg princesses?
Read the books.
I suspect we're going to struggle, though, to find any complexity in Seven's daddy issues. I think it's basically he got her assimilated by the Borg. That's
a big issue, though.
It is a big issue, but there's not much more to it than that. And you know who else's daddy got them even more on purpose assimilated by the Borg?
Yes.
Who is that, Suzanne?
Icheb.
Icheb.
Poor Icheb.
That was even worse, because he was he has the worst daddy issues of everyone.
He does. Well, it's not just daddy, it's parent issues. They're the worst parents ever. Oh my gosh.
They are the worst parents ever. And even though, you know, we've acknowledged the fact that a lot of the other crew have some serious daddy issues going on, I don't think anybody else's parents sacrificed them.
Like, how could you willingly do that to your child?
Didn't they just have him so they could sacrifice him as well?
I think so.
That's the impression I got.
Which is even more
was
messed
they
up.
Specifically conceived him so they could sacrifice him later. That is screwed up times a million.
That'd be like me, you know, okay, here's Logan, and throw him at the Borg. What?
Throw him at the Borg.
Yeah, like, in all fairness, though, he would make the cutest Borg baby. But, you know, that's by the by.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I've just realised you have to take him to his first convention as a little baby Borg. How cute would that be?
Actually, he was going to be Captain Kirk.
Oh.
And I have my Nurse Chapel uniform, and Timothy's a red shirt.
Yeah.
I do need to do a Janeway and a baby Borg.
Yeah, and you could have a t-shirt. So if you were going to do Janeway and Baby Borg, you could get Timothy go with a t-shirt that said, "I know what happened to the Borg baby."
I've got a great one you could do. No, seriously, while we're talking about this, there's a great one you could do. It would take a little work. It would take a little effort. You could go and dress up as Harry Kim and the
Are
baby could
nuts?
Be Naomi. When they jump through the thing into the alternate ship.
She's not going to dress up as Harry.
Oh, yes, because I adore Harry
that would be
so
awesome.
Much.
You do. Harry's your favorite character. You're always telling us.
That's why it would be ironic. It would be amazing.
Although Garrett is always at Dragon Con, so he might get a kick out of that.
Garrett is awesome.
But if you had a little baby Naomi Wildman?
Well, I'd have to put the little spikes on his head.
That's what I'm saying. You should do that.
Although by the time Dragon Con comes around, he's going to be a year old, which is way older than baby Naomi.
Yeah, you know, creative license, right?
But you could do that, and then you could totally get Garrett to hold him for a photo. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. I think I need to do that.
I need some
Katarian spikes.
Yeah.
What about Kes?
Yeah, I think Kes is probably the last one we've got left to talk about, really, isn't it?
Well, her dad never let her play on the surface of the planet.
No. Again, it's... I mean, she's not really bothered, is she, about going against dad's expectations, but... She doesn't seem to be. She's like, screw you.
No, she's more bothered that she never gets to see him again.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it.
I'm not sure there's a whole lot to say about Kes in terms of daddy issues, but...
No, but they're there.
I think there's a few things to pull out. Because like you said, you know, he's very much got his expectations for her. And she's probably more like what we were saying earlier. She's got a different personality type. You know, she's so determined that she does want to go out and explore. And she does want to see... what's out there and not just be confined in this one place, that she really does just go against that. And yes, she's sad to not see him again, and I get the impression that she's quite close with her dad, that they've got quite a close bond.
But don't her parents have this wish that someday she'll see the sun?
Her mom does say that.
Yes. Yeah, her mom says
that. But maybe
that.
Not her dad. Maybe your dad was squashing the dream.
Well, I think it's more of a dream, as you say. And the reality of the fact that it's dangerous out there and they're worried about her kind of overtakes that. Because I do get the feeling that the Acampa are they're quite a reserved race and they're quite nervous about everything and they're not particularly adventurous as a people.
They're like hobbits. They're the hobbits of the Delta Quadrant.
They are the hobbits of the Delta Quadrant. That's a really good analogy, actually. That is perfect.
Without the hairy
feet. They live
underground
and everything.
It really, really works because, as you say, they live underground and their reaction to Kes wanting to go out there is very much the same reaction as the Hobbit's reaction to Bilbo about how he's a troublemaker.
You don't get Ocampa smoking old Toby, though.
No, maybe that's why she hooked up with Neelix, because he has those hairy feet.
Yes.
Space Hobbit.
I'm just looking for my Hobbit.
# Headcanon. It is a great analogy, though. Genuinely, it is a good analogy. They are very Hobbit-like. They know where they are. They're happy with their home comforts that they've got. The caretaker provides for them. They've got this nice, you know, airy Ocampa hole in the ground that they live
Ocampa
in. They're
hole.
Not particularly interested in going in. Well, it's not a Hobbit hole, is it?
The furniture's not as nice, yeah.
But she just wants adventure in the same way that Bilbo does, and I think, you know, they would have looked at her with suspicion had she gone back.
I can picture Kes going, "Mountains, I need mountains, Neelix."
Yeah. So there you go. We've discovered Acampa are actually hobbits. We thought it was Talaxians, who knew. But she obviously found her a spiritual home with Neelix. So at least for a little while. So there we are. It's all about the dads. The dads are driving everything.
And really, kind of like Frodo needs to go off with the elves at the end of the story, right? She has to leave Voyager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she does. There's a parallel.
It's all tying in.
It is. Wow. There's a writer somewhere in the depths of Voyager history listening to our podcast going, my God, somebody finally figured out that we based Kes on the Hobbits.
Yeah, whoever came up with the O'Comper, like, finally someone gets
it. Finally, somebody actually figured it out. We buried it quite well there, but, you know, somebody got there in the end. I'm not sure there's a reprise of a Lord of the Rings book where Frodo comes back angrily several seasons later.
And destroyed.
You ruined my life!
Well, Frodo doesn't have daddy issues. He's got uncle issues. So.
Yeah, that's true. But he takes his uncle with him when he goes to the Grey Havens, doesn't he? So.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag Lord of the Rings knowledge is showing. I love Lord of the Rings, just saying.
I didn't pick up on that. You hide it so well.
I actually got banned from playing Lord of the Rings Trivial Pursuit.
No!
I did. Nobody will play it with me anymore because I started playing, got round, got all the wedges and nobody else got to have a go. So they all refused to play with me anymore.
Sore losers.
I have to admit that I struggle a little bit with the world building aspects. There's a lot of details and a lot of minutiae and a lot of things that I just plain can't commit to memory about the Lord of the Rings.
But you don't have to, that's the thing.
No, you don't. That's not what it's about. Absolutely.
Just so intricate in his world building, and really, you just focus on the story and what you need to know for the story. Because there's so much periphery that just isn't really relevant to the actual narrative.
And everyone understands wanting to go on an adventure sometime, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think amazingly relatable characters.
Absolutely. And I mean, all our characters end up going on an adventure, and their dads have varying opinions about that.
Yes. How dare you go on that adventure?
Or, yay, adventure, go for it.
There and back again, a Delta Quadrant tale by Kes.
I like to think that Chakotay and Janeway would bond over their daddy issues.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the fact that both their dads are now dead and they can't do anything more about it.
Yeah. Because, you know, each of them has guilt over that.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, they can relate on that level.
Yeah.
And their mutual hideous experiences with Cardassians. Although, again, I don't think we hear about Janeway's hideous experiences with Cardassians in the show. Read the book.
The one I'm most fascinated now that we're talking about it is the Doctor, because the Doctor not only has daddy issues, but he has the adopted son, but he also has his holographic family that has issues with
him. That's true.
The Doctor's got issues like crazy. I had never really thought about it until I thought of these. But it's not all daddy issues. It's like the Doctor is the dad in some situations.
Creating the issues.
Well, and I mean, B'Elanna's the one who comes in and, in inverted commas, makes his family more realistic. What does she know about family?
Yeah, right.
No wonder it all went wrong. Yeah, the Doctor and his relationships to family are interesting, aren't they?
I think, no, honestly, this is like, stepping back and reflecting on this a little bit, this is like the tension with these kinds of issues. On the one hand, they define who you are, kind of, right? They're your backstory, the facticity, the reality of your life.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we totally have the ability as people to transcend those things, whether it takes work or takes recognizing that you've got issues or whatever. And you see these characters, this interesting tension between being constrained by all of these facts of their life that they struggle with and yet somehow finding a way to transcend it all.
Yeah.
I just find that fascinating.
Absolutely. And the fact that I think that there are issues in a lot of these characters' pasts that they can relate to each other. We see them bond because of the situation that they're in, but I think the fact that they have these things that they can relate to each other and they have levels where they can go, yeah, I see where you're coming from on that. I think that helps to form this family that we see them end up as, because they do understand each other a lot of the time.
Well, they're each other's real family because, you know, their real families are, you know, have issues
screwed up
with each other. They don't actually have that many issues.
Except for Harry. Perfect baby Harry.
Oh. Harry has his own issues.
He does have his own issues, yeah.
Lots of them.
Harry's clarinet pacifier.
His mom's, what, apple pie? Yeah, he has more mommy issues than daddy issues.
Yeah.
His clarinet is kind of like a pacifier.
Wow. Well, it's been fun talking about daddy issues, mommy issues, son issues, other related relative issues tonight, but that's not the only thing that we've been talking about on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things that you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Oh, and rocks. Do you see rocks came out of the tunnel? Yeah. I love that, that in the and next the first generation...
Thing he, and the first thing he grabs is the exoskeleton. No, forget that it blew up.
But those rocks, every time you see something like that, you can't forget that somehow there are rocks in the tunnel. Just like in yesterday's Enterprise, when the Enterprise-C gets hit and there are rocks that fall from the ceiling on the bridge.
Like, that's right.
There's rocks right. everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, the tunnel's made of rocks.
They used it as insulation.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
I'm going to say, because I can't think of anything, honestly, off the top of my head, excluding the movies, I think that this may be, like, the single best-directed episode of Star Trek in history.
Continuing mission.
Yeah, so let's just talk about the awards per se, because tell us how you heard about the fact that you won an award, and then you went, oh, that's great. And then you realized what competition you were up against, not knowing that you'd been in the competition in the first place, but when you realized who had been the other nominees, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is. So I got a Facebook message from one of the organizers of the awards after it happened, and they said, oh, I'm not sure if you're aware, but you've won two awards. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know that there was an awards thing, and I didn't even know we were nominated, and it turned out we were nominated for 7 categories.
The 602 Club.
I will say that the audience I saw this with was extremely receptive to the film, especially by the end, in the ending battle. And the reason I go there immediately is we're sitting here, we're talking about, you know, sort of the structural issues and taking these things apart.
Yeah.
But I will say that the audience I was with seemed to go along with it anyway. So yeah. The end, there were people cheering and happy with everything. So, you know, I was surrounded by people, and I remember looking around and saying, wow, positive crowd.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And whilst you're there, please leave us a star rating and a review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners-only group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek.fm show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at Trek.fm and on Facebook at facebook.com/Trek.fm. Zachary, when you're not having a trust fall with yourself, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of Metatrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and Philosophy, along with my co-host over there, Mike Morrison. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me over there. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And how about you, Kay, when you're not secretly wishing your holographic father would come to one of your operatic performances, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
No, nobody wants to come to one of my operatic performances.
I would pay real money.
I do.
Oh gosh, no, I'm not the best.
Surely you must know one theme from...
Only in Klingon. I can only sing in Klingon.
Otherwise, oh yes, in Klingon.
Or whale.
Surely you must know one theme from Octo and Melota.
Klingon or whale. Those are my limits.
Melota.
I prefer whale.
Whale. Marvellous. Klingon with the essence of whale would be quite interesting. I have to try that.
You haven't heard Don Giovanni until you've heard it in the original Klingon.
No, whale in the original Klingon.
Whale in the original Klingon. I see. Klingon whale. Well, there must be whales of some description, or whale-like creatures on really, the Klingon homeworld.
Well, we know there are animals like targs and stuff, right? But so we don't hear much about Klingon flora and fauna. That's true.
That is true. Yeah.
Klingon aquatic creatures. I must know more.
There should be like a whole art series of those, like a poster series or something.
To do a book, yeah. Animals of the Klingon oceans.
I kind of just picture like this dolphin with ridges, you know.
And really big fangs.
Aren't Klingon oceans like lava?
So it would be a hardcore dolphin then.
It would be lava dolphin. The lava dolphins of Kronos.
You know at SeaWorld they used to do like dolphin shows and whale shows and stuff? Can you picture like a Klingon dolphin show and the Klingon dolphin pops up and says, I am not a merry dolphin.
You wouldn't be merry if you were swimming in lava.
I will not do those tricks for you.
Good tea, nice house.
Anyway, you can find me in the Babel Conference. And if you want to look me up on Twitter, my handle is Choco Weeble.
No, like, I can picture, like, good tuna, nice pool.
Oh, wow.
I need that drawing right now. If anyone's listening, please.
Oh, gosh. I need that. Well, Suzanne, when you are not leaving your hobbit hole to go on a grand adventure, where can our listeners find you?
For the record, I will never leave my hobbit hole.
Excellent. Never. We'll always know where to find you then.
You can also find me on the Babel Conference now and again, and I'm on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8.
Well, if you would like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, we invite you to become a patron of the network through Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and many more, all available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of time and money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, we have a few people we would like to thank. First of all, being the father of Trek FM, C. Brian Jones, and we do not have any daddy issues with this gentleman whatsoever.
No, none.
Also, our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shea Metella, our Patreon manager. Also, a very special thank you to our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau.
So, join us next week when we will be getting tattoos and going on a quest for vengeance. But until then, this has been To the Journey.